dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for an intelligence briefing on what I think of as the war for the free world. There are few people who are waging the war of ideas part of that war for the free world more effectively and certainly more vigorously than our guest for the next two blocks, I'm very pleased to say. He is Dinesh D'Souza, star now of stage and screen and all manner of popular culture media. He is the author most recently of America, Imagine a World Without Her, the title of a new and terrific film that he has released just before the 4th of July weekend, and I am thrilled to have him with us to talk a bit about the contents of both the book and the film and the world we're in and the world that we would be in without America. Dinesh D'Souza, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It is a treat to have you with us.
Frank, always good to be on the show.
I want to start, Dinesh, with some of the really important work that you've done, both in this most recent set of products and in and your previous ones, notably 2016, about deconstructing what Barack Obama is about, specifically what he meant when he said that he was going to bring about a fundamental transformation of America.
The phrase that Obama used is the remaking of America. And I thought about that a little bit, because how do you remake something? How do you remake a bridge? Well, you remake a bridge by taking down the old bridge and putting a new one in place. So the remaking of America requires the dismantling, the unmaking of the America that's here now. And Obama has set about doing this with a vengeance, and he's made a remarkable progress from his point of view over the past 6 years. So I don't see Obama, as some people do, as kind of a bungler, an ineffective guy. No, we say that because we're measuring him by our standard. By his standard, he's been a roaring success and has been able to change America perhaps more than anybody since Reagan.
Deconstruction is such a key concept here, and you're right. For most of us looking at the dismantled wreckage, what's being left behind, it seems as though it's inconceivable that it could be anything other than incompetence or inadvertence. But what you've laid out persuasively is it's by design.
You look at the difference between Obama and, say, Jimmy Carter. Now, Jimmy Carter, in my opinion, holds the title on the incompetence side. He's the record holder. And the question is, has Obama displaced him? No, because when we look back, Jimmy Carter kept doing things and getting unintended outcomes. Jimmy Carter, for example, came in championing human rights. Then his advisors told him, gee, we have the Shah of Iran. He's a dictator. He has a secret police. You have to pull the Persian rug out from under him. And so Carter did, and he got Khomeini. You know, whoops. But nobody thought that Carter wanted Khomeini, or Carter was pleased with having an Iranian mullah who said death to America and described America as the great Satan. Nobody thought that Carter intended that to happen. But contrast that with Obama. So Obama, in the context of the Egyptian uprising, supports the ouster of our ally Mubarak. And who comes in but the Muslim Brotherhood? Now, did you ever get the sense that Obama was dismayed, distressed, horrified that Egypt, a really important country, is now in the hands of the largest organization of radical Islam in the world? No. Obama seemed serene. He seemed almost delighted. In fact, he seemed upset when the Egyptian military came in and pushed out Morsi, the candidate of the Muslim Brotherhood. So with Obama, you get the sense that this is not accidental. There is an ideology underlying it, and the ideology is to reduce the power of America in the world.
You have described very effectively, it seemed to me, particularly in the latest film, America, Imagine a World Without Her, some of the critical influences on this, well, socialist progressive agenda of dismantling, deconstructing America. Talk, if you would, quickly about the likes of Saul Alinsky and Cloward Piven and Chomsky and Jeremiah Wright and how they have shaped the president and his agenda today.
I realized that in my earlier film, 2016, I had focused, in a sense, just on Obama. And that was important because there were things about Obama that people just didn't know. In this film, I widened the scope of examination because Obama can't remake America by himself. He needs a movement to do it. And there's a powerful movement, the progressive movement, not just in politics, but in education, in Hollywood, in the media, even in the mainline churches. And it is bringing about not just a political, but also a cultural transformation. And so in this film, I focus, Obama's in the film, Hillary's in the film, but we also focus on this larger movement. Now, Saul Alinsky was a community activist and organizer in Chicago. He was a bit of a gangster, and I don't use the term lightly. He actually hung out with the Al Capone gang and says he learned a lot of his political tactics from the mafia. It's hard to believe that this is the guy who's actually the bridge between Obama and Hillary, and he was a mentor to both of them at a very formative stage of their lives.
Yeah, it is. I mean, if this were fiction, people would say that's outrageous and implausible in the extreme, and yet, as you've documented among others, it is all too true. And the point that I guess we want to make sure is impressed upon our listeners here, Dinesh, is with this kind of radical pedigree and the very express desire to remake America, we have a context, we have a sort of intellectual foundation for the very different America that is being produced under our noses. And talk a little bit about how that looks against this filter of the socialist progressive agenda.
Well, I see it dramatically in two areas. First of all, I'm quite worried that this American era that began in 1945 is now coming to an end. It's been a very special time to be an American. I mean, in the domain of foreign policy, nothing important can happen around the world during these last 60 years without America at least having a say-so, if not actually determining the outcome. But if you just look at the world today, you see South America going its own way. You see Iraq up in flames. You see the problems with Gaza and Israel. You see Iran becoming emboldened and strengthened. You see Putin strengthening his muscles in the Ukraine. You see China modernizing its arsenal. And where's America in all this? So, when, you know, when we use the subtitle in our film, Imagine a World Without Her, I look around the world and I say, gee, I meant that as a hypothetical, but it's actually starting to happen. We begin to see what a world would like when American influence is reduced or subtracted.
Yeah, you don't have to do so much imagining. It's just a question of having your eyes open and, as you say, taking a look around. And the importance of this is hard to overstate. I think for those of us who are, you know, specialists in the national security arena and those, I think, listening to this program who care about this sort of thing. Dinesh D'Souza, you've really chronicled that a Pax Americana has not only been sort of a special thing for us, the privileged to be American folks, it's been a special time for the world, a period that has not been without conflict, to be sure, but that has, by the, you know, past historical experience, been relatively stable, relatively peaceful, and certainly extraordinarily prosperous.
It's been prosperous, and also America has shown generosity in foreign policy that is really unprecedented, and no other country would do that. I mean, I don't believe any other country would have rebuilt Japan and Germany after World War II so that former enemies can now become allies and friends. Without America, it's hard to see who would have won World War II. It's hard to see that the Cold War would have been over. I mean, amazingly, if there was no America in the last century, the world might be choosing between today, between Islamic radicalism on the one side or Soviet communism on the other. Now,
we have to hold the thought for just a moment, Dinesh. We have to take a brief pause. When we come back, we're going to be visiting with Dinesh D'Souza about how much those very choices, with sort of fine-tuning, may be in front of us as we contemplate the agenda of Barack Obama producing a world effectively without America, right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, on Amazon.com.
Are you looking to hire an IT specialist or a logistics expert, a medical technician, or a security professional? Well, there are some very qualified candidates out there, America's wounded warriors. These men and women returning from battle are eager to get back to life at home and a good job. Some have wounds you can see, and some have wounds you can't see, like post-traumatic stress disorder. For these accomplished professionals, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps wounded warriors translate their military experience to the civilian workplace. These warriors have world-class job skills and a unique perspective on teamwork. And to ensure proper placement for each individual, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right candidate for the job. When your company is looking to hire talented, highly trained employees, contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home the brave.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're visiting with a very special guest and an extraordinary American, Dinesh D'Souza, a man who has helped us think about America and imagining a world without her. And Dinesh, we were talking before the break about the fact that this is less and less an exercise in imagination and more an exercise in just looking around. I'd like to talk with you a little bit about how the world without America seems to be turning out in a place like the Middle East. Visit with us about your thoughts on that.
Sure. I'd like to start by saying that what Obama's trying to accomplish, I believe, is not to, you know, destroy America so that there's no America. What he wants is America to be, as he puts it, a normal country. Now, who's a normal country? A normal country would be a country like Canada or Chile. Now, things can happen around the world. The Chileans and the Canadians have a point of view. But notice that no one really cares. Why? Because these are normal countries. They have just one seat at the great dining table of nations. And it's rather incredible to think that this is actually what our president wants to make of America. He wants to bring us down a notch so that, in a sense, there's a global redistribution of power. Now, what does that actually mean? What that actually means is that as America has less and less influence, other people get emboldened. In other words, power doesn't just go away, it transfers to other people. And the power enjoyed by America is now going to Russia, to China, and to the Middle East. At the end of our film 2016, my last movie, we made some predictions and we used a phrase, the United States of Islam. The idea being here that the radical Muslims have a dream. It's their dream. It's a dream of bringing together the Shia and the Sunni and uniting Islamic radicalism into a single kingdom like it used to be in the past. Now, they're making remarkable progress toward this, and they're doing it by strengthening the forces of radical Islam, which are, by the way, both in Shia and Sunni Islam. We see it in Iraq, we see it in Iran, we see it in Saudi Arabia, we see it throughout the Middle East.
Right, and they're taking advantage of the vacuum of power created by our redistributionist president, as you say. We're visiting with Dinesh D'Souza, author, pundit, filmmaker, man of letters, former college president, a man, truly a Renaissance man, and a great patriot. And Dinesh, your point on the president's program as it relates to the world is so important. I've tried my hand at a short version of an Obama doctrine, and I guess I'd like you to sort of reflect on it with me, if you would. I boil it down to 9 words: emboldening our enemies, undermining our friends, and diminishing our country. And it seems as though basically, everything you've just talked about, whether it's in terms of the domestic remaking or the international redistribution of power, is about one or the other or some combination of those things. And in the end, being a serious student of history, how does this generally work out when you've emboldened people like the Islamists, or for that matter, the Russians or the Chinese? Is it likely that they will become equally benign administrators of a new international order as we have been?
Well, we can be fairly sure that a world with less America and more power going to others is going to be a more chilling, a more dangerous, a more brutal, more violent place. And whether the Chinese or the Russians or the radical Muslims are going to use that power in the most brutal way is an open question. But all of those people continue to espouse the ethic of conquest that has defined the world since the time of the Babylonians. The American idea is an alternative to conquest. It's the idea that the world should be based on peaceful trade. Don't bomb us, trade with us. That's the essence of our foreign policy. But that's not the essence of anybody else's foreign policy. They might be happy to copy our ethic of wealth creation, but they've never given up on the conquest ethic.
And this is a really important insight, Dinesh. Globalization, we have been encouraged to believe now for decades, is universally subscribed to. And we're all just going to work at getting richer and richer and richer. And as long as trade is free, or more or less free, it doesn't matter who produces stuff. Even if they seem to be a little unfriendly, we can rely upon them, even in the case of, for example, China, to produce vital equipment for our military, for example, or the rare earth minerals that we need for commercial as well as national security applications. In your experience, again, and I think you've really more or less just said it, is it likely to work out that way?
I mean, it's one thing to say that we don't mind if people in Thailand or in China or in India, you know, make our shoes or make manufactured products and sell them. In some ways, that benefits the American consumer, and it allows poor people around the world to come up in life. We've seen hundreds of millions of people lifted out of poverty in these countries. I don't think that's a bad thing, but it's absolutely nuts for any country to take vital ingredients of its national security and turn them over. It would be bad enough to turn them over to other countries in general, but to turn them over to countries that we may actually be fighting against is just moronic. It's similar to the stuff going on at the border. I mean, I don't understand, in an era where our government is able to do surveillance of its own citizens, watch our movements, download our contact list, listen to our phone calls, are you telling me that we can't track people who are coming across the border? That's ridiculous.
Right. If we put our mind to it, but it seems they're less interested in them than they are in us, I guess. Talk, if you would, a bit, Dinesh D'Souza, about your thoughts on American exceptionalism and contrast it with the apparent vision of America of Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, the Chomskys, the Alinskys, and the rest of the socialist progressive.
You know, it's not, I think, a matter that we believe in exceptionalism and they don't. It's that we believe that America is exceptionally good and they believe America is exceptionally bad. So you can distinguish two spirits in America, the spirit of 1776 and the spirit of 1968. The spirit of 1776 is entrepreneurial, innovative. It's based upon the idea that you are the architect of your own destiny. It draws on the immigrant virtues of people who are frugal, self-disciplined, uncomplaining, willing to go out west in covered wagons and make their own life. That's the spirit that I identify with as an immigrant. There's a rival spirit. This is the Obama spirit of 1968. It is bitter. It looks at America as the bad guy. It doesn't want to pull the bandwagon. It wants to bring people here who fit in the bandwagon. It's a spirit of entitlement. It's a spirit of people who produce very little. I mean, look at Obama. Can he produce an iPhone? No. But he can't even put up a website. But what he does produce is resentment, hatred, self-hatred. He's a great mobilizer of the mob. So I see a productive and a destructive spirit in America, and one of them ultimately is going to prevail.
Yeah. Dinesh D'Souza, could I just ask you to talk a little bit about Hillary? We're told that she is supposed to be the successor to President Obama, perhaps completing his third term, if you will. Where does she come from in all of this, and how ill-advisable is that?
I think that there's a kind of a hope that is attached to Hillary, and Hillary has been, you know, trying to lie strategically kind of low, particularly when she was in the Senate. But to some degree, I just read an article in the Wall Street Journal saying that Hillary is now even trying to pull away from Obama. She realizes Obama is becoming a national embarrassment. But the question is whether Hillary is more like Bill or whether Hillary is more like Barack. And we address this in our movie. If I may say, Frank, our movie, AmericaTheMovie.com, is where you can find out where it's playing. But with Hillary, my instinct is that she's a lot closer to Obama than she is to her husband ideologically. And in fact, Alinsky is the bridge that connects the two of them.
Bingo. Dinesh D'Souza, what a splendid two segments. I hope you'll come back to us for a longer visit at some point soon. Congratulations on your splendid new film, America, Imagine a World Without Her, your new book by the same title. Check it out, folks, AmericaTheMovie.com. Go to see it, for crying out loud. You need to know what's in it. Dinesh D'Souza, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Next up, Bill Gertz on Russian cheating on arms control. What it might mean for you. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
This is Frank Effney with the Secure Freedom Minute.
President Obama's determination to fundamentally transform this country and redistribute its power to foreign nations, particularly hostile ones, has helped produce the following strategic reverses, if not outright disasters. Russia is continuing to try to dismember Ukraine and threatening worse. China has staked territorial claims to nearly all the South China Sea. Iraq is in terminal decline. With our forces' departure, Afghanistan will shortly head there too. Libya is increasingly in the hands of radical jihadists, as is Syria. Iran is at the cusp of having a deliverable nuclear weapon. And our southern border is awash with teenagers likely to fall into the hands of drug gangs and jihadists here. In short, our enemies are emboldened, our friends undermined, and our country diminished. That's the Obama Doctrine and his most disastrous legacy. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
I was diagnosed with PTSD. I got out and was sort of on my own.
Since 2003, more than 103,000 service members have been diagnosed with PTSD. Hope for the Warriors focuses not on what happened, but what happens next. Don't let them be forgotten. You can help restore hope to our military families.
My wife and my son are affected by combat, too.
Visit hopeforthewarriors.org today.
People know that they can turn to them and trust them.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement, and how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, wherever the mission takes us, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for our nation, for us all. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We're going inside the ring. That's where our friend Bill Gertz, the Free Beacon's senior editor and the Washington Times columnist, prize-winning columnist for that matter, of the Inside the Ring column, takes us each week. It's always a delight to have him with us. Welcome back, Bill.
Hi, good to be on the program.
As ever, you have done some very important reporting this week, Bill, and I want to cover some of the highlights of it as part of our intelligence briefing here at Secure Freedom Radio. Maybe you could start with some of the coverage you've been giving on the revelations, confirmation, I should say, of the fact that Russia has been violating one of the most important treaties, we're told, of the latter Cold War, namely the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaties. What's up with that, and what are its strategic implications?
It's a very significant story. The backstory for this issue is that the State Department has known about this violation since at least 2010 and possibly as early as 2008. And the significance of that is that they kept this violation secret from the Senate and Congress, which then went ahead and ratified a new arms agreement with the Russians. And it highlights what many critics of arms control have said for decades, is that arms control is a fool's errand with the Russians because the U.S. abides by these agreements, constrains their forces, while the Russians basically violate them and use these treaties as a political tool to limit U.S. military capabilities. In this case, this INF treaty was signed in 1987, back during the Reagan administration.
I was there.
Right, and it basically eliminated all intermediate cruise and ballistic missiles, and the Russians were found to to have violated this in a significant way. I mean, the wording of the annual State Department report, which was released this week, said that they've developed, tested, fielded. In other words, they have fielded an INF missile in violation of the treaty. This is not necessarily a surprise other than the arms control devotees, because the Russians have been saying because of Chinese intermediate-range missile development, they are not going to be constrained in developing similar missiles.
Yeah. Bill Gertz, this is, as you say, entirely news, and certainly the nature of the kind of Soviet-slash-Russian gambit in terms of using arms control as an instrument of restraining us and allowing them to gain advantage is well-practiced over many, many years, as is the practice of ignoring these things by the U.S. government. And the threat, I worried about it at the time. We talked with my old colleague and your friend and mine, Mark Schneider, the other day about this. He points out that there are actually several other examples of violations of this treaty. And what the Russians are doing is basically reconstituting a capacity to threaten our friends and allies and forces, for that matter, in Europe and Asia that they weren't supposed to have and got rid of for a time. This is indeed a very significant story and very troubling, because it doesn't seem as though the administration, beyond having made this reluctant finding, is going to do anything about it, as best I can tell. Do you see anything on that score?
No, that's a real troubling aspect, which is very typical of the Obama administration's approach. They don't follow the law. We've seen that with the Affordable Care Act. And now when it comes to national security, this is, in a sense, international law. They're ignoring it for policy reasons, because they wish so hard to have an arms control process and treaties and without really considering the impact of these violations. So there is a movement. Representative Mike Rogers, the chairman of the House Armed Services Strategic Forces Subcommittee, has introduced legislation that would force the administration to take these violations seriously and to take steps that would either force the Russians back into compliance or to withdraw from the INF treaty.
Yeah, well, and they may want to look at some other treaties, like New START, for that matter. Bill, let me turn to a different topic. Again, a tremendously important story that you had at the Washington Free Beacon about the confirmation by a distinguished military officer, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, who is currently the director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, that a threat that we have not properly understood or characterized, at least for some time now, namely the ideology behind these various jihadist movements and operations, is actually growing and indeed exponentially increasing. Talk a little bit about Mike Flynn's comments at the Aspen conference that you attended earlier this week.
Yes, I just returned from Colorado, where the annual Aspen Security Forum is one of the premier venues for senior officials to speak on the record. So it's really a great opportunity to get some of these officials to say what they really mean. And of course, General Flynn, he's outgoing. He announced in April that he's retiring in the fall. And the story there is that he's had a dispute with the Director of National Intelligence, although the details on that are somewhat sketchy. But he did talk about this expanding terrorist ideology. And he said, he was asked, are we safer today than we were 5 years ago? And he said no. And clearly, he was really expressing himself fully in wanting to challenge the administration, although he did it in an indirect way as a senior intelligence official. But he said, his belief is that the core al-Qaeda is its ideology, and that this ideology is, as you said, expanding exponentially.
Not on the path to defeat, as we had been repeatedly told, and an example of national security fraud, it seems to me.
Yes, and it's sucking in young people from around the world, and we're seeing the expansion of ultra-violent groups like ISIL, and we're seeing the expansion of lone wolf terrorists like the Tsarnaev brothers, who blew up the Boston Marathon finish line.
Bill, even worse, in a way, you've described in your Inside the Ring column this week at the Washington Times that al-Qaeda has very clearly, apparently, targeted the U.S. critical infrastructure. This is an issue that I've been very concerned about, as you know, and I think many of us are over the years, that this kind of soft underbelly of our society is very vulnerable. Talk a little bit about what is in prospect there if Al-Qaeda or others, for that matter, are able and willing to do this thing that Paul Singer, a prominent hedge fund financier, has warned is the single greatest threat to the United States. He called it the electromagnetic pulse threat. But if through that means or others, the grid were to be taken down, talk about the consequences.
Yes, this was also an outgrowth of comments made by General Flynn in Aspen, where he talked about the next 9/11 type event being a cyber attack, a terrorist cyber attack. Flynn was echoing earlier comments at Aspen by John Carlin, the Assistant Attorney General for National Security in the Justice Department, who basically said, we're currently in a pre-9/11 moment with respect to cyber. And he said, how do we know this? He said, because Al-Qaeda has said that they want to attack the U.S. infrastructure and create a massive disruption of our electrical grid or our financial networks. And obviously, this could have a devastating impact on the country. So Flynn was saying, look, we're not properly organized to deal with this. The problem is that the government networks are protected somewhat by the government, but that the key infrastructure, 80% of it, is in the hands of private owners, and they need help in securing those infrastructures.
Against all hazards, I think it's important to say, cyber being one. Bill, in closing, we've got less than a minute. You can't really do justice to this, but among others, you've been hearing from several senior military officials about Chinese conduct, military buildup, and some rather in-your-face activities on the margins of an exercise we actually allowed them to participate in. Give us a sense of both of those.
The Chinese, for the first time, are taking part in the regular RIMPAC, Rim of the Pacific exercise, with 22 nations. And surprisingly, according to the U.S. commander of the Pacific Command, Admiral Locklear, the Chinese sent a spy ship to spy on Hawaii in these war games. He tried to play down the spying, but said that, oh, well, look, at least they're recognizing that when we spy against China in their exclusive economic zones, that 230-mile zone off the coast, that it's permitted. Additionally, Admiral Jonathan Greenert, the Chief of Naval Operations at Aspen, was asked if we went to war with China, what would be the most threatening thing? And he said their crews and ballistic missiles. It's a real serious concern for the Navy, which has to protect allies and keep the sea lanes open there.
And being built up aggressively, it seems, by the day. Bill Gertz, we have to leave it at that. Thank you so much, as always. It's great to get your update, and your reporting and analysis is incredibly important to all of us. Keep it up, my friend. Come back to us soon.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook on Amazon.com.
I was diagnosed with PTSD. I got out and was sort of on my own.
Since 2003, more than 103,000 service members have been diagnosed with PTSD. Hope for the Warriors focuses not on what happened, but what happens next. Don't let them be forgotten. You can help restore hope to our military families.
My wife and my son are affected by combat, too.
Visit hopeforthewarriors.org today.
People know that they can turn to them and trust them.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I lost my arm.
I lost my legs.
But you can't see what I lost. Over 625,000 vets are suffering from traumatic brain injury
and post-traumatic stress. They're the wounds you can't see.
But with your help, we can expose the invisible wounds of war.
And get these veterans the help they desperately need.
100% of your donation goes toward building treatment centers. Help heal the invisible wounds of war. Donate at makeitvisible.org.
I had no choice the news that was given to me on August 2nd.
Gold Star mom, Debbie Lee.
But I did have a choice how I responded.
In August 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
I chose to put on Mark's boots, pick up his weapon, and stay in the fight for our troops and their families.
And America's Mighty Warriors was born.
Mark's name meant Mighty Warrior. And he definitely lived up to his name.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org, you'll find Mark's last letter home.
Read it, and you'll know what AMW's about.
It's about service to active duty members of the military and their families.
Including care packages, visits, and more.
It's about supporting the wounded and the people who love them.
It's about the Gold Star family.
Special retreats, concerts, Mother's and Father's Day events to let them know they're loved and not forgotten. Donations are tax deductible and go directly where they're needed.
Read Mark's last letter home.
And just as he inspired his mom, let Mark inspire you to some random acts of kindness of your own.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
Annie Soldier Incorporated was started in August 2003 as a simple family effort to help the soldiers in one Army unit, thus the name. However, due to overwhelming requests, on January 1, 2004, the Annie Soldier effort was expanded so it would include any member of any of the armed services in harm's way. Won't you please help? Find out how by going to www.anysoldier.com today.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined by Mark Krikorian, one of the eminent authorities on and leaders about matters involving immigration and border security. He is the executive director of the very highly valued Center for Immigration Studies and an author and a columnist for outfits like National Review Online. You see him frequently on Fox and elsewhere. It's always a privilege to have him with us. Mark, welcome. Good to have you.
I'm glad to be here.
A lot going on in your part of the battle space of the war for the free world, as I call it. Let's talk about, if we may, first, before we get into sort of the latest developments on Capitol Hill as they stand at the moment, Mark. What is the nature of the crisis that the Congress is supposed to be addressing as a matter of the utmost urgency?
Well, really, at its base, the crisis is whether the United States has the will to protect its own sovereignty. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. This is something Europe is dealing with. Quite honestly, it's something Israel's dealing with in a much more direct and existential way. But this is what it boils down to. Do modern developed democracies, ours in particular, have the will to enforce their own borders and their own sovereignty? Not the tools, because the tools, obviously, this is not rocket science. It's whether we have the will to do it. And frankly, there's a significant part of our political class, unfortunately, represented in the White House and the administration, that doesn't really believe that the United States has the right to keep these Central Americans out of the United States, that if they want to move here, that we should accommodate them, that it's up to them, not up to us. And that really is the core issue.
It is endlessly described as a humanitarian crisis, though, Mark, because among the people coming across the border in large numbers, particularly of late, are unmistakably some young people. Turns out quite a substantial proportion of them aren't all that young. They're sort of adolescents or mid-teenagers. These are the sorts of people that it's been observed are susceptible to being brought into gangs. Does this really constitute, in your view, a humanitarian crisis, or is it more really a national security and perhaps public safety, public health crisis?
Yeah, I mean, there's a humanitarian aspect to it in the sense that there's a lot of people showing up and we have to somehow deal with it. So, yeah, but I mean, all law enforcement has some humanitarian aspect to it. You need people have to be treated humanely, even if they're being locked up. But that's not what's really going on. At core, it's not a refugee flow that we need to respond to as a humanitarian matter, but rather a law enforcement, public safety, and national security issue. Like you said, the large majority of these supposedly unaccompanied minors are teenagers. And I say supposedly because they all have relatives here, so they're really not unaccompanied minors. They were all brought up by smugglers through Mexico. No 8-year-old is wandering 1,000 miles through Mexico to get to the Rio Grande. And there's already evidence that some of those people are themselves gang members, which, of course, you'd be stupid if you were a gang not to take advantage of this, and others are already being recruited to join gangs in the detention centers where we're holding some of these young people. So this is clearly a security issue we need to be concerned about.
Is it likely, before, again, we get into what the House and Senate are doing in response to these crises, that throwing money at this problem, as the president has proposed, while leaving in place the magnet that clearly has drawn many of these people, children and otherwise, here, namely amnesty, the prospect of amnesty, the confidence even that the president is going to grant amnesty unilaterally, if not through congressional action, that is at work here? Is it likely, Mark, that we're going to see anything better coming out of this other than just having more of the same?
Well, unfortunately, as long as the Democrats are in the majority in the Senate, probably not. But, I'm not too worried about the extra spending. The House has dramatically pared back the amount that they would be authorizing from what Obama asked for. And, you know, in fact, the Homeland Security Department and the Health and Human Services, which handles these supposedly unaccompanied minors, they are burning through a lot of money. So I'm not even too worried about that. It's what the other part you mentioned, the magnet that's drawing this. This isn't fixing the problem. The money is a Band-Aid. And sometimes you need a Band-Aid. The problem is we're not fixing the problem. And as long as the Democrats control the Senate, and unfortunately, as long as the president stays in the White House, we're not really going to be able to fix the core problem that's creating all of these subsequent problems, which is this administration isn't all that interested in enforcing immigration laws.
Mark, talk then about what the Senate has done, and then let's turn to what the House is about as we speak.
Well, the Senate was trying to pass a much larger amount of money in a bill, supplemental funding bill. What happened was that Senator Sessions basically killed the thing single-handedly by pointing, but there's a parliamentary maneuver. Anyway, the point is it wasn't paid for. The money wasn't coming from anywhere. It was all going to be deficit spending. And in order to do that, there has to be a supermajority of 60, and they couldn't get it. They couldn't even come close. And so the Senate, just the whole thing just, you know, fizzled out, and they left. In the House, what happened was that a bill that the leadership, Republican leadership, was pushing but wasn't very good, failed. Conservatives killed it, and it looks like today, as we speak, it's still in flux, but it looks like they might actually be bringing up for a vote a significantly better bill that has a reasonable chance of passing. I'm not going to make any bets on that.
And the key components of that bill, as far as you're concerned, would be, Mark, what?
There's two things that are the that caused all the contention. One is the tweaks, the fixes to a 2008 bill that the president is saying is really the pretext for his not being able to enforce the law. That teenagers and minors who come on their own, supposedly on their own, have a special treatment if they're not from Mexico. And the bill that failed yesterday would have said it was fixing that. It actually would have made the problem worse. The language that it looks like they're going to put in the bill today would actually fix the problem. And the other is, yesterday's bill did not have a measure that would have prohibited the president from expanding this illegal unilateral amnesty that he's already applied to about 500,000 illegals. He says he's going to apply it to millions on his own this month. And the language, you know, would be a separate bill they're probably going to vote on today, would be much clearer and would prohibit him from doing that. Senate's not going to take it up, so it really is more a message of sending a message, but it's important that message be sent.
Yes, especially at a moment when the Senate is elsewhere and the Congress is at best very severely divided on this. Some kind of message, some kind of clarity as to where Congress stands is important. And I'm hoping you're right that by the time this airs, Mark Krikorian, that we'll see it have come out rather better than anyone had a reason to expect. And that's, I think you would agree, because the American people have made known their displeasure with what the president is about, with what the Senate has been about under Harry Reid, with what John Boehner was about until he got slapped down by his own people. Mark, let me ask you very quickly, we've got less than a minute, where are we on a comprehensive immigration reform?
It's still possible, but I'm less worried than before, because the fear was any bill that the Senate, that the House sent over, even if it didn't include a big amnesty, the Senate could just use as an excuse and stick the amnesty into it. Speaker Boehner finally said this week, categorically, not a chance. We will not entertain anything the Senate sends over that has the big immigration bill or the DREAM Act or anything, just the targeted issue that we're trying to deal with.
A long time coming, but it is good to hear indeed. Mark Krikorian, it's always good to hear from you as well. Thank you for joining us and for the extraordinarily important work you do at the Center for Immigration Studies. I know you'll keep it up. Hope the rest of you will come back to us again next week. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.